Welcome to Inflection Point, conversations with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Today on Inflection Point, they say it takes money to make money, but Sonia Perkins says that's not all it takes.
But I also think it's important that women don't view themselves as a minority that's downtrodden and, you know, needs to get up. I think women should just get up, stand up, straight posture, and just own it.
Today on Inflection Point, we own it with venture capitalist Sonia Perkins. Only 6% of partners in venture capital firms are women, and 77% of those firms have never even had a female investor. And according to the Diana Project from Babson College, businesses having all-men teams are more than four times as likely to receive funding from venture capital investors as companies with even a single woman on the team. With us today is Sonia Perkins, who was just named one of Worth Magazine's 2015 100 Most Powerful People in Global Finance. She is one of 15 women to make that list this year. Sonia Perkins' venture capital investment group, Broadway Angels, is made up only of women. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's so good to have you here. Tell us why you formed an all-women investing group.
Well, I've been a venture capitalist for over 25 years. And in those years, working for Menlo Ventures and TA Associates, it was very rare to work with a woman or a woman partner. And I thought it would be fun to get some of the top women venture capitalists, as well as the top women in technology, to start an investment group and work with all women. And I think the main reason was really to inspire women and girls to want to get into technology and also get into venture capital, because I think both of the jobs, venture capital and technology, are really great for women. And I felt that there weren't enough role models that were positive for young women, college students, high school students to look up to say, hey, I want to get into venture capital. And so we decided to create this investment group where we just happen to be women and hopefully inspire women and girls to get into technology and to get into venture capital, as well as other venture capital firms to hire more women, to see more women.
Why do you think that venture capital and tech are particularly great for girls and women?
Well, I used to make a joke. You get to talk on the phone all day and spend money.
no stereotype there.
No, but it's like a great job for women. When I was younger, when I was cold calling as an investment analyst for TA Associates. But I think the job is very creative. I think it's very social. I think you can ask a lot of questions and do a lot of research. And I think it's very well suited for women. I've loved it.
What types of companies are you focusing on with Broadway Angels?
Well, basically the same kinds of companies that I've focused on my entire career, which has been information technology type companies, where I'm looking for companies that solve a real problem, that don't have a lot of other solutions to solve that problem, and a company that has the potential to be number one in the space. In addition to that, what Broadway Angels does is it gets the top women in technology and the top women in venture capital, where we all have our own expertise in a certain area. And so sometimes one of the Broadway Angels will bring in an investment where they're expert in a space, which I don't really know a lot about the space, but I'll know a lot about the person who's saying this is the best deal I've seen in a long time. And then I'll invest in those. So it's kind of a nice way to share knowledge, share due diligence and such. So I can be a little broader investing out of Broadway Angels than I was at Menlo Ventures.
And is it companies run by both genders, any gender, or is it just women run companies?
Well, it turns out that's a big misconception of Broadway Angels, where people think because we are women investors, we must only invest in women, which is not true at all. It would be like thinking if men venture capitalists in, you know, venture capital firms only invest in men, which we know that's not true. And so we invest in both men and women. Personally, I've made about 35 investments since starting Broadway Angels in 2010. And I was even surprised by this number. And I know your audience will be too, but 50% of my investments have been founded by a woman, which is very unusual. I think the statistic for venture funded companies founded by women is a little less, than 5%. So it's very big difference.
Right. Well, that's just the thing, right? That the classic venture capital firm isn't really investing in companies run
right.
by women.
And it's interesting because, you know, our number one goal at Broadway Angels is to invest in the very best companies and the very best people to provide the best returns. Like, we're all return driven, just like the venture capital industry as a whole. And we are not gender biased. So we're not focused on men or just focused on women. And it was just really, really surprising to find that 50% of the portfolio are founded by women. That was just pure accident.
Do you think that it's because more women are attracted to the fact that you're all women with Broadway Angels?
I do think that happens where it's very unusual to be an entrepreneur and actually attend a meeting with venture capitalists to find more than one woman in the room or any women in the room. And I think that the best entrepreneurs who are starting companies, they are dying to meet us. They love meeting, you know, many of the top women in tech and venture in the same room. So I think they seek us out. I think that's probably right.
Well, I've read that, you know, there's research on everything these days. And so I've actually read that venture capital firms with women partners are twice as likely to invest in companies with a woman on the management team.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What's your personal hypothesis?
Well, you know, I don't think there's any grand conspiracy at all. I think that people tend to focus on what they're comfortable with. I mean, I think it's a lot of like hires like, and, you know, people you went to college with or people that you used to work with or someone who's your best friend. It's potentially easier to hire that kind of person. And I think if there's a woman on a management team and they see a firm that's got a woman on the partnership, they might think that's probably a firm I want to work with.
What are some common mistakes that women who are pitching you might make?
I think one is they tend to be very conservative about their market opportunity and what they can do. For example, let's say a guy comes in and he's got this great idea and this great product. You know, he will talk about the potential of that company beyond what he's able to do in the first year, but, you know, maybe 10 years from now. And I think a woman will say, gosh, well, I know I can do this in 1 year, but I'm just going to talk about what I can do in 6 months because I really don't want to disappoint. And it could be the same company and the same idea, but when the guy is pitching it, it just sounds so much bigger. So I think sometimes women sell themselves short a little bit on the market opportunity. And then the other thing is, which is probably a little bit controversial. So women, when they come in to present to an all-male venture capital group, sometimes they look extra great. You know, they'll have a fancy dress on or colors or long earrings or something like that, which can be a little distracting. And so I personally think, you know, when women present, they should put on their black or gray suit, you know, think Coco Chanel buying Banana Republic, and just wear a uniform because the guys all wear uniforms. And so it's just kind of confusing when somebody comes in and they're dressed up like a party. I think it's just distracting. So,
well, we had Mariam Nafisi, who's the founder of Minted.
Who I know very well.
Yes, one of the companies that you've invested in.
As well as her prior company, which was Eve.com.
Okay, so you've had a long relationship with
her. A very long
her.
Relationship with Mariam.
So she was here on Inflection Point, and she said that female investors, such as yourself, were much more likely to understand her business than male investors. Do you feel like venture capital funds are missing out by not investing in more women-owned businesses? I mean, do you think that that's a big hurdle that happens frequently?
Well, you know, I think that diversity is important for everything, whether it be sex or race or age. Diversity is important across the boards because different people see different things in different ways. And I do think there are a lot of really great companies and really great ideas that are founded by women, like Eve.com, which was Mariam's first company, and Minted, and companies like Handwriting.io and Rent the Runway. And I think that, you know, if you're only going to get 2% of the dollars, or women are going to get 2-4% of the dollars from venture capital, they're going to miss out on some of these deals. And those are just the few that got funded. I mean, I think there's a lot of really great ideas, like Roxbox is one of my investments, which is a subscription jewelry service, which has just incredible margins, incredible growth. And, you know, takes a while for maybe someone who doesn't wear jewelry to figure that one out. But it turns out it's a fabulous market. Another investment that's a Broadway Angels investment is called The Real Real, which is high-end, authenticated luxury consignment of clothing. And that company is just doing incredibly well. Julie Wainwright is the CEO. And, you know, again, that's such a unique business, and it, and who would have guessed that it would have been so successful?
So with Maryam and with Minted, what did you see when you looked at what she was proposing?
Well, the first thing, I was a seed investor. So first time she raised a dollar, I was a participant. And basically the first thing I was very attracted to was Maryam. She's an incredible entrepreneur, and I was so lucky to have worked with her in the past when she was much, much younger, over 10 years ago, to know her style and how she does things. So that was the first thing that I looked at. And when you're doing early stage investing, especially seed investing, and now they call it pre-seed investing, you know, it's really the person that you think about. But then when you think about what the market is, which Minted started out with stationery and then moved to holiday cards and kind of the art of the written card or invitation or things like that. I mean, obviously in our family, I don't know about yours, but I'm the one who sends the Christmas cards, who sends the invitations, who writes the thank you notes. So it's a really great market, and the product was just beautiful, and the vision for the product was beautiful. And since then, you know, she's done incredibly well by going after other markets like the art market and the party market and other kinds of paper things. And then just recently she launched digital, which, you know, again, is another great product. And so anyway, I was just super attracted to the category and the business model. Printed paper tends to have pretty good margins. So I was, and it's a repeat business where people buy over and over and over. So once you acquire a customer once, you don't have to keep acquiring new customers. So there were so many things about the business that I loved. And of course, you know, Maryam being the entrepreneur was a no-brainer.
So the person, the market opportunity, the potential for the business, are there key things that you always look for in any potential investment?
Yeah, I do. I always look at market size. Market size is really important because, you know, when a company isn't working, I always ask the question, what's the problem? Is it the market? Is it the product? Does the product not work? Or is it an implementation problem where does the management, can they execute on the plan? And you can always fix the product if it's broken. You can always fix the management team, either inspire them or coach them or find other management teams that can help with the product. But you can never fix the market. So if you have a product that nobody is buying because the market doesn't want it, you're never going to be able to fix that. And so market for me is really important. And then as I've gotten older, I tend to focus more on people too, which I used to just be totally market focused. And now I really matters to me the people that I'm working with. So I'm very focused on people.
What are the characteristics of people that you like to work with?
Well, they're nice.
That's a great start.
Yeah, I'm too old to spend time with people who I don't think are nice. But also, most of them have a track record or some kind of background of success, where they know how to hire well, they know how to build products, they know how to pick markets. You know, that kind of thing.
So you just had, before we got on the mic, you were telling me about one of the companies that you invested in that just sold to Cisco.
Yes. It was an announced acquisition.
Okay.
Of one mainstream was announced, or Cisco announced that they were going to acquire the company.
If one company announces that they're going to acquire another company, is that always a done deal at that point, or does that just mean conversations have begun and they're willing to reveal it publicly?
No, I typically, when it is announced that a company is going to be acquired, it's going to be acquired. And I think there's just a lot of legal work and paperwork and sometimes government regulations that have to be met before the deal can actually close. So it's probably going to close. Yeah.
So that's good news for you as the
investor. Yeah, it's great news. Yeah, it's wonderful news. It's a company called One Mainstream. And it's an entrepreneur that we've worked with in the past at Menlo Ventures, and he started a new company to help anybody who's creating television or video content to put it on an iPad or iPhone, and he figured out all of the back-end infrastructure for that to happen. And it's obviously a big trend, and he was the leader in the space, and he and his team put together just a fantastic product, and Cisco felt that this was important to their product lineup, and I think it's a brilliant acquisition on their part. And for a very nice return. So that's great.
That's and very validating, probably,
for you. It's good to have winners, for sure.
So, Sonia, did you set out to be a venture capitalist?
You know, I always liked business. I think my mother would probably tell you that I did, but I who would have known what a venture capitalist was when I was a child? But I always liked business. And I always liked looking at the whole business and not just part of the business. And I didn't want to just focus on marketing or just focus on finance or just focus on sales. You know, I wanted to focus on all of it. And, you know, when I was right after college, I was kind of naive in my thinking because these jobs are very different. But I thought the two best areas where you could look at the whole business would be management consulting and venture capital. And I had this great professor from the University of Virginia who had taught a class about entrepreneurship, which was fairly unusual in those days. And so I actually knew what venture capital was, which I think a lot of people did not know what it was because it used to be a very small, niche-y kind of industry. And I got this offer to work at TA Associates in Boston right when the PC industry was just getting started. And I had some experience with PCs as a computer programmer at UVA and working in the computer lab troubleshooting because nobody had computers in their rooms. We had to go to a computer lab to, that's how old I am. You had to go to a computer lab to print your stuff and to work on a computer. And so TA was just starting to invest in software and just starting to invest in PC related software. And it was a great fit. And I basically cold called every private software company in the United States for 3 years. And it was an amazing experience to learn about business models and talk with entrepreneurs. That's why I love talking on the phone all day. and you know, obviously it turned out well. The three companies that I cold called that we actually invested in all went public. So it was a great time to be in the venture industry. And that was in the late 80s.
Well, you then went to Menlo Ventures,
yes,
right, where you spent most of your career,
yes,
over 20 years. You became a partner, and you're still a partner there, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So what was your experience being a woman there, and what did it take to work your way up to partner?
Well, you know, it took everybody. You had to do great deals. You had to be able to find the great deals. You had to be able to win the great deals. And you had to be able to work well with the other partners. And so, which was the criteria for all of us. But, you know, the venture industry is very performance oriented. So you can actually measure your internal rate of return or your IRR. And I was luckily, or a woman would say luckily, but I was good at making great investments. And that's why I made partner. And so I loved working there. I mean, I still do love working there. They're great people. You know, they're like family. You know, you have a partners meeting every Monday and, you know, you get to know people really well. And so I didn't really notice a difference. I mean,
as you started off as a young woman who had no track record except for your previous employer, did it ever feel like you've got a double, you know, you hear a lot of women say, I feel like I have to work twice as hard just to get equal recognition. I mean, did you ever run into anything like that in the field?
Not really. You know, when I was at TA Associates, I found three companies that all went public. One of them was McAfee Associates, which was a great company that I'm sure many people have heard of. And I decided to go to Harvard Business School after working there for 3 years. And this wonderful managing director, Kevin Landry, came into my office before I was about to leave to go to Harvard Business School. And he said, well, how about if I just double your salary and you don't go to business school? And I thought, how come he wasn't paying me double my salary before?
Yeah.
So I went to business school. It's funny. It's, you know, the venture industry is really a nice industry. I mean, I don't know any horror stories for women in venture.
We hear about the boys club a lot and how men help each other out. Do you think women should do the same? Do you think there should be a women's club?
Well, that's why we do Broadway Angels, right? I mean, the interesting thing about Broadway Angels is that for many of the women venture capitalists that are members of Broadway Angels, they are the only woman partner. And for women to have a voice, you need to be more than just one. And so because we're all working together, we have a voice and people know who we are. And Broadway Angels kind of gives all of us a voice. And there's never been a Women's Venture Capital Association, which It's surprising, but I guess there's just not enough interest. And so we're kind of, you know, a little bit of that where, you know, we have women venture capitalists and we have peers and we share ideas. And it's just really great to not be the only woman, even though it's not so bad being the only woman either. So,
well, what do you think about all of the support groups that are forming either ad hoc or through? It's sort of like being called the third wave of feminism, you know, where there, these circles are coming together of women helping each other.
So I don't know much about that. So I don't really have a comment, but I do think that mentorship is really important. And, you know, I always, you know, try to find people to mentor, usually people that are working with me, helping me with something else and, you know, helping them. But it's important to do that. But I also think it's important that women don't view themselves as a minority that's downtrodden and, you know, needs to get up. I think women should just get up, stand up, straight posture and just own it, you know, like own your story. Just like the question you asked me earlier where, you know, what do women, you know, do when they make a mistake, right? They don't own it. They don't say, I'm going to do this amazing company and it's going to grow to, it's going to be 100 million in revenue in 10 years or 5 years. This is my story and I'm going to hire the best people and I'm going to have the best customers and the business model is going to work. Just own it. You know, like don't ask a question in a meeting. What do you think? Like, no, don't do that.
Okay. No questions in meetings.
No, not declarative
statements.
Right. Just own your story. Own it.
Do you think the world would look a lot different if there were more women investors?
Yeah, totally. I think there'd be different kinds of companies getting funded. I still think a lot of the existing companies would get funded too, but of course there'd be different kinds of companies funded. Yeah.
You've got a young daughter.
I do.
Do you ever talk with her about money or her kind of how she can own it in the world? I mean, could you share any advice you give her?
It's interesting. A lot of it is just having her see me doing what I'm doing. And I was just invited to speak at a panel. It was in Santa Barbara. And I had breakfast with the person who was going to introduce me. And my husband and daughter were also eating breakfast in the same restaurant. And of course, my daughter came over and said hello. And then when the panel started, it was myself and Kate Mitchell, who are on this, I guess it's a fireside chat or something. When it started, I was introduced with my background, and then my daughter was in the audience, and I had told her that she had to pay attention, she couldn't interrupt, she couldn't come up to the stage, and she had to be quiet.
And she's how old?
She's 7.
Okay.
She did all those things, and so the person who introduced us said, and I'd like you to know that Sonia's daughter is in the audience, and she stood up straight, put a big smile on her face, and waved at everybody hello. And it was hundreds of people who were CFOs and COOs of venture capital firms were in the audience, and it was a really good thing. I think probably the audience probably learned as much of the importance of diversity in venture capital as Tess learned, like, wow, I can get on that stage one day and I can give a speech. And so she's learning by watching. And I always tell her, you can do anything you want as long as you put your mind to it.
Well, one of the things that you've done, aside from everything we've just talked about, is created a nonprofit called Project Glimmer. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I can. So Project Glimmer inspires at-risk teenage girls and women to believe in themselves by letting them know their community cares. So that's our mission. And what we do is we give gifts to at-risk teenage girls and women. And it started out when the San Francisco Firefighters Toy Program told me they had nothing for teenage girls. And I was kind of saddened by that. I was thinking, gosh, when I was 12, if somebody forgot Christmas or a birthday, I would be really sad. And I thought, that's just the worst year to be forgotten. And so my friends and I, we gathered up about 800 pieces of jewelry. A lot of it came from our jewelry boxes that we just didn't wear anymore and things like that. And we gave it to the San Francisco Firefighters Toy Program, and they were just delighted. And we have these events, which we call Boxing Joy, where we take the gifts and we make sure that they're beautifully polished and clean and fashionable and, you know, just gorgeous. And we put them in these beautiful boxes, and then we put a little note that says, we believe in you. And we give them to the organizations that serve at-risk teenage girls and women. And we found that the community is really into it too. People really want to give back, and they want the people in their communities to know that they're cared about. And we've grown tremendously. To date, we've given over 120,000 gifts in over 20 U.S. cities across the country. We have hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that collect gifts, package them up, and give them to 501c3s. And we're really letting people know that their communities care about them. And I have this great story where we used to only do holiday gifts, but now we do birthday and Mother's Day. And for many of our recipients, it's the only gift they get, which is incredible. And one Mother's Day, we gave out 1,200 gifts to a program called Foster Care Counts in Los Angeles. And 1,200 foster children were able to give their 1,200 foster mothers a Mother's Day gift. And it was just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Where is all the jewelry coming from now? You can't possibly be collecting it from your
no.
own.
No, so we started out just a lot was we'll take it from anywhere, but we have so many great partners that we work with. And those gifts for Mother's Day came from Roxbox. We also work with a company called Lydell NYC. We work with The Balm, which is a makeup company, Sephora, a lot of the big brands in beauty, and a lot of the big brands in makeup. So we basically give jewelry and makeup, and it's costume jewelry. And we have two rules about the gifts that we give, and it's really, really important. And the first rule is the intention of the gift is just as important as the actual gift. And so we don't want someone to say, oh, here's a bunch of stuff that we don't use anymore. We hate it. Like, yuck, you guys can take it. We're not interested in that. But we are interested in someone saying, hey, I bought this jewelry that I really liked a while ago, and I'm not wearing it anymore. I bet you someone would love it from Project Glimmer. Or, you know, like a company like Lydell saying, you know, these were really great products that we sold last year, but this year we have the new styles, and these are still in style, but because we're such a cutting edge designer, you know, we're going to give these to Project Glimmer and not sell them on our site. And so that's the kind of thing there. And then the second rule is no gift can disappoint, which means it can't be an old fashioned like pin or something like that. You know, a teenage girl is not going to want that, right? She's going to want something that maybe Taylor Swift would like. And so what we have done is we have like the very cool gifts go to the teenage girls. And then the nice gifts that more of a mature woman would like go to mature women, and they can be women in homeless shelters or abused, or, you know, there's all kinds of people coming out of jail. It goes to them. And then the other gifts that are just not even worth it, we'll give to Goodwill or we'll give to another place. So nothing gets wasted. But we really want the women and girls in our community to know that we really thought about them so much that we got them a really nice gift. And a while back, I was with San Francisco's fire chief, Joanne Hayes White, who is amazing. And she's been an amazing supporter of Project Glimmer. And we've been amazing supporter of their toy program. She introduced me to someone and she said, yeah, this is Sonia Perkins. She's the founder of Project Glimmer. They're the ones who give the good gifts.
Oh, that's a great compliment.
And it was the best compliment I could have ever got. And, you know, I think, you know, to turn on the negative side, when we first started, I was always looking at every single gift that we gave just to make sure it was good enough. But now obviously I can't do that. So I'm trying to work through that anxiety. But we have a great executive director, this woman, Chrissy Shea, who's just done phenomenal things with Project Glimmer in terms of our pre-holiday lunch that we have every year and our Boxing Joy events, which we have at least twice a year, and doing employee volunteer programs. She's been great at reaching out to brands of beauty and brands of jewelry. And we're, of course, always looking for more brands to donate to us, as well as people who could just donate cash as well, which, you know, obviously it takes that to operate. So Chrissy's just done a phenomenal job as our executive director.
Have you met any of the girls who have received the jewelry?
I have. And they all have their stories. You know, they're women from homeless prenatal program, women from the art mural type projects, girls from these programs. Like one girl, her name is Danielle. She is of Mexican descent. Her mother was deported when she was, I think, 12, and she was going to a really good charter high school, and she was an American citizen because she was born in America. And so she ended up spending her childhood sleeping on couches of friends and relatives in East Palo Alto. And then she ultimately got into Berkeley, which was a great story. And so that girl we gave gifts to, and she was delighted by that. And so I've met them, and, you know, some of them, the stories are very sad. Like, there's a program called the Charlotte Maxwell Complementary Clinic, which helps women who have cancer get through the system through hospitals. And also they provide services like massage and acupuncture and things like that. And for a lot of these women, they are also homeless or really on the edge of poverty, if not purely in poverty. And, you know, one time I came over there and I brought 300 gifts, and we didn't give them any makeup because sometimes if you go through chemo, it will cause a reaction. So we just had hats and accessories and jewelry. And I got this tour of this fabulous facility. And at the end, I asked the director, I said, wow, does this even matter? You know, these people are really suffering. And she told me it matters so much because these people are forgotten. And while this wonderful program is serving some of their needs when it comes to healthcare, the core need of just having a little joy in your heart and a surprise under the lid of a beautiful box, you know, you can't even explain how important that is.
How can listeners get involved?
Well, you can visit projectglimmer.org, and on there there will be a list of the events that we do, including Boxing Joy and our holiday lunch. You can also send money, which we always need, and become a supporter that way. You can also become a volunteer. We're always looking for volunteers to help us with getting the gifts prepared and beautifully wrapped. Of course, if you are involved in the beauty and makeup industry, we would love your help because that's what we give. And we want, of course, only the best gifts.
Sonia, what's the best advice about leadership you've ever received?
You know, I think the best advice I ever received was, if you want to get a job in venture capital, you have to get a job in venture capital.
Oh,
and,
helpful.
And I never gave up. I mean, I think if you have a goal and you want to do something, you just continually strive for that goal.
Sonia Perkins, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
That was Sonia Perkins, a venture capitalist and the founder of Broadway Angels, an all-women investment group. That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. And while you're there, I invite you to become a patron of Inflection Point, just like Gabe and Mart, Tom Jacoby, and Laura Baedeker, who are helping bring the voices and views of powerful women to the ears of everyone. And you can too at inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.